You better come on in my kitchen. There's hard to be raining out
door. Come over here, kid. Where's up? You never know, you might have to cook for 20 guys someday. You see, you start out with a little bit of oil. You fry some garlic. Then you throw in some tomatoes, tomato paste, you fry it, you make sure it doesn't stick. You gotta do a boil, you shove in all your sausage and your meatballs. And a little bit of wine. A little bit of sugar.
Delicious.
And that's my trick.
When the moon hits your eye like a big pizza pie, that's amore.
Enough. I'm so sick and tired of hearing you people talk about food, food, food. That's all anybody ever talks about is prosciutto, cheese, and fava beans. I'm drowning here.
Jesus Christ, take it easy.
We're not even engaged yet.
When you're married, you'll understand the importance of fresh produce. Potatoes,
yeah. I eat with gusto, damn your bet, my country, tis of thee. I eat for social progress, I eat for victory.
Delicious.
Stay hungry, stay hungry, stay hungry.
You want some more?
Good evening and welcome to Mouthful, the Wine Country's most delicious hour. It's Michelle, Anna, Jordan. Thanks for tuning in. We have a particularly yummy show tonight, and I know that from direct experience. We have folks from two of Sonoma County's newest restaurants here, and they have some resonances, some things in common that makes me really happy that we have them together. We have Genova Iverson and Eric Korsch of Restaurant Eloise, which is located where Bistro V was briefly and Chez Peo was for a very long time. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
And congratulations. This is like your one-month anniversary or thereabouts, isn't it?
We completed 4 weeks of service.
And we also have Brian Anderson. Bistro 29 opened on February 8th. It is where there were several restaurants, probably the one most familiar to people, especially if you don't have a real long memory, is Cafe Lolo. Before that, it was Restaurant Matisse, and before that, it was even Mandala Cafe, going back pretty far in Sonoma County history. Bistro 29 focuses on the foods really of Normandy, Breton cuisine, you would say?
Brittany, yeah.
Yeah. And Restaurant Eloise seems to be more general, yeah. French-inspired, somewhat south of France, but I just got to tell people, get it right out there in the beginning. They have roasted marrow bones. They are so very, very, very good. I used to think I was going to have to buy a plane ticket to get roasted marrow bones. And then I discovered a little place in in San Francisco that served them. So I used Cafe Bastille. I used to drive down to San Francisco. But when that alleyway got all the other restaurants, they sort of fell off. They weren't so good anymore. So you have brought roasted marrow bones to me in Sonoma County. I'm so very grateful.
It's our pleasure.
And they are delicious, but I do have to tell you, they're a meal in themselves. I never should have ordered an entree afterwards.
It's pretty filling. That was our biggest surprise, I think, is how receptive people have been to the marrow bone.
When I was there was order after order after order of marrow bones going past me, and it's like, gee, and I thought I might get in trouble eating them in Sebastopol.
Exactly.
Yeah, our general manager kind of shakes his head in disbelief, I think, because, you know, we first showed him the menu probably a year ago, and he was like, well, that's going to be the hardest one, and I don't think there's another appetizer that we've sold more of.
Yeah, they seem to be selling themselves. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's great to see. But we also have here in the studio something that Brian made, so I think that's how we should really get started on the show. Tell us what you brought.
Oh, I brought a couple different things. Sweets, more or less. I brought some chocolate madeleines that we make at the restaurant, and they go on a Café Gourmand dish that we do, and they're basically a fondant cake that we make into a madeleine mold, so they're kind of good and chocolatey. And otherwise, I brought some sweet crepes that I've made, and they're just a traditional French sweet crepe. I do on a apparatus called a bilik, which is a 16-inch wide diameter plaque, if you would. Can't seem to find the words in English, but I know them in French.
I'm holding out for the crepes because I think crepes come before chocolate.
Oh, okay. Yeah. And I have a little bit of caramelized apple compote.
Is that the really large it's like a really large hot surface shaped
griddle.
Like a drum?
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Yes. Cool. And this one that I have, there are two of them actually in the restaurant. They're electric, so they keep a nice even temperature and whatnot.
Oh, cool.
I had gas ones, but they weren't quite as
reliable.
And the sweet crepes don't have buckwheat in them.
The sweet crepes don't have buckwheat.
Right.
The traditional savory crepes are 90% buckwheat flour, 10% all-purpose flour.
Mm-hmm. There isn't anyone else in the county doing buckwheat crepes, to my knowledge.
To my knowledge, I haven't seen anyone here in a very long time. Yeah.
So those one things I like. You can get bones in Sebastopol now, and you can get buckwheat crepes in Santa Rosa. I think it's a really nice addition to the dining scene.
Madeline's are delicious. They're still warm.
Oh, they're so warm. Well, let's get those crepes over to me, Brian, so I can follow it up with a Madeline.
Here you go.
Brian, you grew up in Santa Rosa, right?
Yes.
I know you studied French at...
At Piner High School. For 2 years.
And Eric and Ginevra, you two are new. You guys moved here from New York.
Yeah. We've been here for just about a year to the day.
I'm not so new, though. I was born and raised in Marin.
Oh, you were? Okay.
Yeah,
so in a sense, it's a homecoming.
Yeah.
My
family's here.
Oh, okay.
They're in Healdsburg and...
Well, that answers the next question. I was going to say.
Why here?
So,
yeah, I've been in New York for about 8 years, met Eric.
Mm-hmm.
But this is where I come from. So I brought him back.
And are you a New Yorker? In New York?
I am born and raised. Born on Long Island. Been in the city for quite some time. And never really thought I'd leave. But here I am out in the West County, which I love.
How you said you're settling in a way?
Okay. Uh-huh. Yeah, it was great. Well, you know, I think, you know, we left from JFK. We landed at, I think it was SFO, mm-hmm. got in the car, arrived, you know, at the house that we rent in Geyserville, and I kind of got out. And it was a little bit of a shock right off the bat, you know, just from the, you don't realize how, you know, busy New York is when you're there all the time. So
yeah, it's really, really different.
It was a little strange at first, but it's really nice now. So,
did you come here with the intention of starting a restaurant?
Yeah, we've been working on our project for maybe the last. We've been talking about it for the last probably 7 years, and actively working on it for the last two.
Mm-hmm.
So
initially, we thought we would do it in Brooklyn, mm-hmm. but then. Having a daughter kind of changed a lot.
How old is your daughter?
She's two. So we wanted to raise her with space and maybe an easier life. The restaurant business, as we all know, is not particularly easy. So mm-hmm. if we could, you know, coming out here is a little bit, would slowed it down a little bit and have, you know, there's space. We have an acre on the restaurant, mm-hmm. around the restaurant for her to run around and spend time picking vegetables and fruits and all that. So, that was a big incentive as well.
Yeah, one thing I noticed, and I've just been one time, you've done beautiful things with the gardens. They're really lush and gorgeous,
mm-hmm.
and it was never like that before.
Yeah, well, that was a real priority for us. You know, when we were sitting in New York thinking about all the ideals, you know, that moving out here would bring, you know, we kind of decided that we were going to grow as much food for the restaurant as we could. You know, we kind of decided that we wanted to get a standalone restaurant with room to plant. So all of these things were kind of our criteria when we started looking for a restaurant mm-hmm. space. And amazingly, a large percentage of what we really wanted, we got, you know. So we're really, really lucky, mm-hmm. you know, in that respect.
And you have things, you have Puntarella.
Uh-huh.
You dedicated an entire raised bed to Puntarella,
mm-hmm.
which is a hard-to-describe Italian chicory.
Yeah.
How is it selling?
It sells great. That's kind of Ginevra's dish from back in New York, where we had a farmer that was a few minutes out of the city, used to bring it to us all the time. And
the farmer that would drop it off would just drop off whatever he felt like dropping off usually. Mm-hmm. And so you'd get this in the middle of New York, you'd get this truck that was blowing black smoke out, and the wheels were barely holding on, and he would just sort of throw the box of vegetables onto the sidewalk, and you'd wonder what you got this week. And so we started getting Puntarelle, and he just was randomly dropping it off, and it wasn't a particularly Italian restaurant, but we did do some bitter greens and things like that that I was working at. So we tasted it, and it is incredibly bitter. It's a very intense bitter green in the dandelion family. So we just would keep receiving it and had to come up with a recipe to sell it. And we ended up with, or I ended up making this very eggy, heavy dressing and doing candied bacon so that the sweetness.
Oh, that's the one with the candied
bacon. Yeah, so that the sweetness would balance out the bitterness just because. And I actually ended up falling in love with it. It was initially something that we just had to figure out what to do with it. And that led to, I think, a really delicious dish. Granted, now we got so excited about having space to plant Puntarelle, we planted it everywhere, and it just keeps coming back and coming back. And I don't think we'll ever be able to take it off the menu till it freezes.
Yeah, exactly.
We have a plethora of it.
And we do have one farmer in Sonoma County that has been growing it for two or 3 years. So I was familiar with it through them. I think I love it.
Yeah.
I think it's delicious. But it's not something that sells real well when they have it. You know, you kind of need an introduction to it.
I think the candied bacon tends to
candy bacon.
Can,
yeah.
I think
it smooths over the introduction pretty well.
It can sell just about anything.
Pork on anything's good.
Yeah. Hmm?
Pork on anything is good.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. So back to you, Brian. I want you to give us maybe an overview of the cuisine of Brittany and the way you're expressing that in Bistro 29's menu.
Well, I would say California and Brittany have a lot of similarities in a lot of the stuff that, produce and products that you could get in this area. And so basically they use a lot of buckwheat, which, I mean, I know you could get that anywhere. But they use a lot of buckwheat. And so the crepes, I do a pain de pie that I use. It's just a spice bread that I use buckwheat in also. And use that with our cheese board and with our foie gras.
Oh, your foie gras is so good. Oh. Really delicious.
Some people aren't too thrilled with the foie gras being on the menu, but you know how that goes.
We're total proponents of foie gras.
Yeah.
You're in good company.
Do you get negative attention because of that?
I've gotten a few people that have come in and said, I really liked the food. It was great and this and that, but I don't know if I'll come back because you have foie on the menu. So.
Mm-hmm. Don't order it.
Did they eat it?
Yeah, no.
Oh, well, you should tell them to try it first.
Yeah. No, but the food from Brittany is pretty hearty. So some of the, summertime dishes and stuff, I have to kind of go out of that area just to kind of get some things that'll work on the menu because...
it's a chillier area of France.
Yeah, it's a chillier area.
Fog.
And most of their traditional dishes were made for, the farm workers and whatnot that they would eat maybe, one late meal in the day, and that was like their big meal, so they had to have something that they could cook all day and that kind of thing. The hardest part is sometimes translating those menu ideas in for the American audience too, because it's like our people that come to our restaurant sometimes have a lot of questions, and it's hard for the servers sometimes to describe what something is.
Do you find in general your customers are pretty open minded? Are they adventurous?
Like we, have the sardines on the menu, and it's not as like the bone marrow, but it is kind of in the same way that, there wasn't that many people serving sardines as an entree. And then
10 years ago, there was nobody.
Yeah.
We have sardines on our menu too, actually.
Yeah. And one day we might sell 20 orders, and then we might go four without selling them, of course. And then, but they seem to sell.
Yeah. K&L Bistro I think they were the first ones to have them on their menu with any regularity. Okay. And they're really popular there.
So. Yeah, they're good. I mean, I put them on because my kids love them. So,
yeah,
my son eats them almost every day when they come in. So
that's great.
It's a staple in the French, tradition almost. It's just, in the Mediterranean tradition at least. Sardines.
You eat what's available.
Yeah,
exactly. And I mean, especially being in California, sardines they come from
Monterey. Yeah, yeah.
They come right there, right here, and if you want to eat locally.
I wanted to say something else too about that, getting back to the foie gras. you know, Hudson Valley foie gras in New York actually just went totally free range. And, you know, I think Sonoma foie gras is right behind them. You know, to those who get so upset about it, I mean, I think that there are much bigger battles to be fought. You know, let's make all our beef in this country free range. Let's do that. You know,
yeah. Let's get chickens out of before the
little
cages.
Before we start, exactly. Yeah. I mean, you know, those chicken hotels where there's like, you know, 1,000 chickens living on top of each other. You know, yeah. Let's worry about that. You know, let's worry less about the foie gras.
Well, we had a funny story. Brian Howard, general manager, used to work at Laleem's in Berkeley and had a funny interaction with a customer who said, who was basically complaining that there was foie gras on the menu. And then she proceeded to order it, but told Brian to tell the chef that she's going to order it, but she is very unhappy with it being on the menu.
Wow.
Which is sort of,
that's an interesting approach,
different. But, you know, sort of telling that, you know, it's a delicious thing. People want to eat it, but it's been made out to be such a terrible. Yeah.
And, you know, here, because of Sonoma foie gras, and I don't know, you were in New York when it happened, but do you know about the vandalism?
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, when they, you know, lots of damage. So it's a flashpoint for some people in this area.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, and you don't have foie gras on your menu right now, do you?
No. Well, we did, but we actually just took it off. I was doing it as part of a charcuterie plate.
Oh, okay.
But being a young fledgling restaurant, we can't really afford.
I should have come and had that charcuterie plate before you took it off.
Instead, we're doing a sausage made out of pig trotters.
Yeah.
So it's a little bit, better for us. Huh?
Okay. So a little bit more about Bistro 29's menu. Maybe I should ask some specific questions. Tell me about your soup. Your soup de Johnny. It's so good.
Oh, the soup de Johnny. That I kind of named myself a little bit because my wife's grandfather was a Johnny, as they call him. And those are the people during the war and whatnot that would sell onions out of their, and garlic out of trucks.
That's what they were called?
Yeah, they were called Johnnies. And that's what my wife's grandfather was. And so it's a basically, it's a French onion soup, but we do it vegetarian, so we use a vegetable base. We just make veg stock. And instead of, you know, using like a cognac or a brandy or sherry or something like that, we use apple cider, the hard cider in it, and that tends to add a little sweetness to it. And then it also, as it,
that sounds great,
as it cooks down, like almost, you know, as we reheat it daily and that kind of thing, it actually gets more caramelized and becomes even better. And then we put the we make some buckwheat crepes that we cut up and we fry those. They're almost like a buckwheat chip or a crouton, as I call them. And we put that in the soup and then, you know, gratin it with Gruyere on the top and that kind of.
It's really just that little twist of the buckwheat crepe. It's just, it's familiar but different. It's just really.
And it's a really big
fabulous
seller too, actually.
Uh-huh.
We thought, you know, we'll take it off in the summertime, you know, but then. It's a, you know, it's a classic, French onion soup's a classic bistro
staple.
You know, staple, and it's kind of, and it sells well, so.
Yeah, and I think it's an important dish in several ways. It's, there have been times in my life, I mean, it's the classic comfort food when various people, you attend a funeral, you know, someone close dies. I always think when MFK Fisher died back in 1993, I wanted to go to a cuisine bourgeoise restaurant, chose La Guerre, that was the perfect one at the time, and I wanted French onion soup. I wanted French onion soup and a bottle of Chateauneuf du Pape, and it was just, you know,
In memory of me
is comfort. So having that soup available year round, I think you're
I'm glad you like it, a public service.
It's,
it's one of those things too that, you know, it's everybody, a lot of people do it, and so when it's done right, people, you know, this is so really great.
Good. This is very, very good.
I'm glad it.
Yeah, you feel better after eating a soup like that.
Yeah, that's great. What about crepes? How are people responding to the crepes? And would you talk a little bit about the difference between a true French creperie in France, you know, the way...
As opposed to how
you have to tweak it?
Well, the crepes are selling quite well, actually.
Oh, good.
We kind of did our menu in a way that we have a crepe section in the middle, kind of direct people if they wanted to start off with, say, a soup, then have a crepe, then an entree. But I think I'm a little too generous in my portion sizes.
Your portions
and
are huge.
So people tend to get a crepe sometimes, you know, and then an entree or just an app and a crepe. But in France, when you go to Brittany, at least, where if you're French and you're Britain, they'll say that's the only place to get crepes. But they bring you the menu. You order one crepe. They take your menu away. They bring you your crepe. You eat that. They clear your table. They come back with the menu again. You know, you maybe order another crepe, and this could go on for how many crepes you want to eat. So you order one at a time, and it's a very lengthy process. Sometimes
you
you're
might
there.
Spend a couple hours.
Well, yeah, and in France they take a long time to eat anyway. So at the table, you know, so the creperies, it's about the same.
Mm-hmm. And you didn't think you could sustain it in that style here.
The thing with just having a creperie in Santa Rosa is that you have to do numbers to make a creperie feasible. You mm-hmm. know what I mean? It's in San Francisco, there's Ticus, you know, which mm-hmm. does a boom in business. But there's also the people in San Francisco to sustain that. Where mm-hmm. in Santa Rosa, you know, you'd have to be able to do 200 a night or something mm-hmm. like that. It's just not Santa Rosa's style.
Uh-huh. So, but you do have them on a separate section. You have the four savory crepes, am I right?
Yeah, and then every once in a while we'll throw in a special.
And then you have the dessert crepes done two or three different ways.
Yeah, we have, how many do we have? I could look at my menu. We have four of them.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Butter, sugar, and a little lemon.
Yeah.
That's heaven.
Yeah, you've had that one before.
Yes, I have. So. Yes, indeed. It was absolutely, it's delicious. I don't have much of a sweet tooth, so it's got to be a really good dessert for me to like it. And you have, cider is also a classic from region.
Brittany. Yeah.
From Brittany.
Yeah, most people always, when they think of cider, they think of Normandy, which mm-hmm. tends to be, you know, where the majority of it comes from. But in Brittany, they drink cider with crepes. That's a traditional drink. Mm-hmm. And also, if you're not into cider, then a lot of times they drink buttermilk. But I don't have that on my menu.
No.
For
people who, yeah, they kind of know Brittany.
Yeah.
And they kind of know Normandy. Can we do a little brief geography lesson so we can let people think about where in France it is?
Well, it would be the most northwest point of France. So, you know, if you're looking at the map.
It's on the Atlantic.
It's on the Atlantic, and it's on the English Channel. And it butts up to Normandy. There's Le Mont Saint-Michel, which was always a point of contention between whether it was in Normandy or in Brittany, mm-hmm. which is in Normandy. But it's right on the on the line there. It's the river. So it's right up there in the corner. And that's where, of course, our name comes from. Because my wife is from Finistère, which is a department in Brittany.
Mm-hmm. And it's parallel to county.
Yeah, exactly. And it's the 29th department. Mm-hmm. Should have to look at my shirt to remember that.
Mm-hmm. So we're not talking about the south of France when we talk about the Finistère. We're talking about the exact 180 degrees, you know, the northwest of France. And exactly. Very different. And that's the area that likes salted butter.
Exactly.
And it's also the area where they have the lamb pré-salé, the lamb that is raised in the salt marshes.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I haven't been there yet. So I would very much like to try that lamb. And you get some really good salt from there, too.
Yes. That's where most of the sea salt, the gray salt or mm-hmm. the fleur de sel.
Celgris and fleur de sel.
And then they have the Brittany, the blue lobster. Is that what we had lobster. When we were in the Breton lobster.
Yeah, similar to the North American lobster, but it's all blue. We had it when we were there. Yeah. But do you do a Kugelhamen, you know, the Breton butter cake?
Oh,
the one that's
Kugelhamen.
Like, yeah, exactly. Is that how you say it?
I've done it once. We did which we're going to do again on the 29th of every month, do like a $29 three-course menu.
Okay. What a great idea.
And we did it
I
once,
love that.
And that's what we did for our dessert on that was a Kugelhamen. So.
Okay.
So delicious.
Yeah, that's a great thing.
Yeah. And that uses the salted butter, too.
Yeah, that uses,
if you can get it over here.
Yeah,
it's hard to find. But
about quite a bit. 25% of the cake is butter, actually.
That uh-huh. sounds like a good cake to me.
Uh-huh. Yeah, 25%
sugar,
butter,
and
yeah,
25% maybe a little flour.
Sugar, and the rest is a dough. So.
Yes, right. Butter. Butter is right up there with pork, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
So are you doing an August 29th dinner?
Yes, we're going to do it this coming Friday.
Exciting. We'll have to talk more about that.
Yeah.
Time flies when you're having a good time. It's already coming up. Well, it's 25 after 7 already. How about some music, Lawrence?
Mm-hmm. La fille de choix est belle au coin de la rue là-bas. Elle a une clientèle qui lui remplit son bar. Quand son boulot s'achève, elle s'en va à son tour chercher un peu de rêve dans un bal du faubourg. Son homme est un artiste, c'est un drôle de petit gars, un accordéoniste qui sait jouer la java. Elle écoute la java qu'elle fredonne tout bas, elle ne regarde même pas la piste.
It's Mouthful. It's Michelle Jordan. It is KRCB Community Radio. For Sonoma County, thanks for sticking with us. My guests this evening, Ginevra Iverson and Eric Korsch of Restaurant Eloise in Sebastopol, and Brian Anderson of Bistro 29 in Santa Rosa. So, Brian, August 29th, Friday night, special $29 dinner featuring...
three courses of unknown origin. <yet. laughs>
But three courses of classic Brittany foods.
Yes.
Okay. I just think that's such a great idea. Anything prefix, anything community. If you did a community table, that would be even better. I want to switch over to talking about Eloise's menu. But first, your wife, Francoise?
Yeah, Francoise.
And how is she involved in the restaurant?
She does all the bookkeeping, all the... daily reports and whatnot, and then on most nights she tries to get in and helps do like a little bartending, a little buffing, you know, back of the house stuff. Mm-hmm. But always, you know, in there, getting in there. Same with my kids.
Yeah, well, it seems very much a family restaurant, so I didn't want to ignore the rest of the family.
Yes.
And so, family restaurant, Restaurant Eloise. Where did the name Eloise come from?
That's a tough one.
well, we thought a lot about a lot of different names, and then I think we were reading the book, the children's book Eloise, to our daughter, and you know, I mean, that book is just a great children's book. Uh-huh. You know, any book, you know, that they drink martinis throughout, any children's book that they drink martinis throughout is pretty hysterical. So we like, you know, we like it a lot. And
it wasn't named after the book, but
yeah,
it was sort
really
of that
named
same
after the book,
mischievous.
Was,
uh-huh.
How does that feel, the name? How does that feel? It has sort of a very light.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a French, you know.
Yeah, it's vaguely French.
French
and it's,
a woman's, you know, name, which I've always liked the idea of for a restaurant.
Mm-hmm. Like a ship.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And Eric's always sailed, so I always thought that was a funny connection.
So what was the concept of going into this? What was the concept for the menu?
Food we like to eat.
Okay.
Really. And then I think, you know, our own... professional aesthetic led us to push it into one distinct, you know, direction, and that was definitely, you know, French Mediterranean.
Yeah. We love to eat everything. I mean, particularly Asian and maybe Greek, but yeah, we had to narrow it down. Mm-hmm. We didn't want to be a serve everything kind of restaurant. It's not really where we come from as far as training goes, and the places that we've cooked in have pretty much had a very specific style. Mm-hmm. And I feel like cooking in New York, you get that same thing like he was saying about Tiku's. When you have a lot of people, you can find a niche and really do something and do it to the best of your ability. And I think we kind of thought about how we could just really make it a focused restaurant while still cooking things that we love to eat. Mm-hmm. And that's sort of where we came to. We came to the south of France and Mediterranean, a little bit beyond that, but for the most part.
No, I think 80 or 90% of the menu is pretty much southern French food. But, you know, the roasted bone marrow, I mean, the first person to do that was Fergus Henderson, and then, you know, Gabrielle Hamilton in New York stole it from him, and we stole it from the both of them.
We actually know where that started?
Well, not roasted bone marrow particularly, that exact
preparation.
Oh, that style.
That,
okay.
The
with
preparation.
The salad.
No,
the
people
thing.
Have been eating roasted bones, I think, for about 5,000 years.
Yeah, I remember.
When you get hungry, you'll eat anything.
I liked it when I was a little get lamb chops, and I noticed that there were these bones with this stuff, and so I tried it. And my mother and my sister would just throw those, you know. Yeah. They throw them away. Yeah. And so I was very young. I was like, I want your bones.
Yep.
And
exactly.
I just loved sucking the marrow
and
out.
Growing up, we used to fight over, in an Italian family, we'd fight over the marrow from the Osso Buco. And it was always a competition to see how much marrow. You had to eat the meat, but then you had to eat the marrow too, and who could get through the most and get yourself sick off of it. But yeah.
So what kind of bones are used in that dish? How do you get?
Well, calf bones.
Calf bones?
Exactly.
So you have a calf bone supplier.
We do. We do. We, in fact, we get them from, you know, we really looked for a Sonoma County supplier, but apparently all the cattle, the beef and, you know, the beef ranches in Sonoma aren't really large enough to supply us with a consistent, you know, bone the whole year. So we working with a purveyor by the name of Biagio Meat, and he gets his meat from a place called Strawberry Mountain in southern Oregon. And they're totally free range and, you know, the whole nine yards when it comes to that. And they're large enough that we can get pretty much the same product all year. So that was kind of our criteria, and that's, you know.
Strawberry Fields, I hadn't heard about
that. Yeah. Especially Strawberry now that Mountain. We're, how many pounds are we getting? 60, 80 pounds
yeah,
a week
80
or something?
Pounds or something
80 pounds a week.
It's like, it's,
and we're not even that busy.
Who would have thought?
So how has it been? Oh, you know, both of you, you're opening restaurants at probably not the most dynamic economic time in Sonoma County.
We're waiting for November.
Yeah.
I think people will start spending money again.
Yeah, one
Keep
would hope.
Fingers crossed.
It seems to be one of those things every week there's a different excuse that we come up with for being slow. You know, it's, oh, well, school just got out.
Yeah. The fair, you start
the
to
fair,
do that.
And then it's
nice weather. It's
the
raining.
Olympics.
It's, yeah.
Now school's back in. Yeah. So
right.
Hopefully it's just being new and people not knowing that we're both, you know, these locations again, you know, and that kind of stuff. So,
yeah, I don't know about your restaurant, but I know the Bistro, well, with Bistro V, was closed for quite some time.
Yeah,
so people are, you know, it was known as just sort of an empty space for a long time with the
but
for
also,
sale sign.
For so much longer than that, that parking lot was always full. Chez Peo packed people in, and they did for many, many years. They always go down in history as really launching my career because Pierre wouldn't hire me as a waitress.
Oh, really?
So you had to find out something else.
He turned me down as a waitress. And I thought, well, if I'd been there and started making good money as a waitress, maybe I wouldn't have gone on to do the things I've done. But it was very popular for a very long time. So I think people in West County are really used to driving to that location. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And
it
looks
a lot,
lively.
Yeah.
Since you opened, it looks lively.
Apparently, it was called Le Pommier before Chez Peo.
Le Pommier.
Oh, Le Pommier. Is that it?
Le Pommier.
Okay.
We couldn't find anything about it. And then
somebody just told us the other day.
Let's see. I think what happened, let me get this right. Jean-Pierre Saulnier. I think he opened Le Pommier there and then moved it to what is now a brightly painted Mexican restaurant in Sebastopol. But I think that was the second location of Le Pommier, if I have it correct. This goes back quite far. But I graduated from Sonoma State, and a friend and I went out to dinner to celebrate my graduation, and we went to Le Pommier, the location where you are now.
Uh-huh. That's great.
So, yeah, definitely goes back. Mm-hmm. So what sort of things are – all of you jump in. What are you – doing to attract customers other than putting out your sign? And I mean, what else do you do?
Well, we haven't done really anything yet because we intentionally opened very quietly.
We're scared.
We were scared to fail. And we didn't want that.
You don't need a rush of people
the first 6 weeks.
Yeah,
you don't. No. And it's just, it really can turn people off from their experience there. If the waiters can't keep up or the kitchen can't keep up with the amount of people.
Everybody can feel free
door.
To come in now, though, if you want.
Yeah. We're ready.
We've been trying to do our best just by getting on the internet, you know, having a website now, which is bistro29.com. And we've been passing out, we've made ourselves some little flyers, have gone around to some of the wineries and some of the inns and hotels around the area also to talk to the concierge and those places and whatnot. So
that's
hopefully that'll kind of get our name out there. And we advertise in the Bohemian. That's about our only advertising that we do right now. Unfortunately, it's very difficult to find our phone number in the phone book or online because – some reason they left us out of the restaurant section of the phone book.
Oh no.
Yeah. So when we first opened, we were going to be Bistro 29 and spell out 29. And so when we put in our fictitious name mm-hmm. papers. That's how we had it. And so when it was put in the phone book, it also went in as Bistro 29 spelt out. So the only way you could find it is looking in the pink pages under Bistro 29.
Oh, my.
Yeah, so.
That's difficult.
Well, yeah, it doesn't help us out.
We'll have to figure out a way to help you out online. Yeah. I think there are ways that can be done to make it easier. What about things like, well, you're doing the 29th of the month dinners.
And then we're doing one on the 8th of September, too, which is a Monday, which we're normally closed. But we're doing like a wine tasting with a French theme to it. And it's a five course tasting menu paired with wine. It's going to be $95. And that's kind of something that we hope that we can maybe get some extra people in on that and, you know, taste our food and then hopefully have return customers.
Mm-hmm. And you guys have a special events. You have a private dining room,
right?
Yeah,
we have a private dining room in the back that mm-hmm. can seat up to 30. And, yeah, we've just started to really explore that avenue and trying to book parties in there. I mean, I think it's great for anniversaries or birthday parties, holiday parties, hopefully. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, that's what we have. We're going to open for lunch next month.
Oh, you are?
Yeah. So that'll be another
service period. Lunch menu underway?
Yeah, I think we're going to utilize kind of a European model of, kind of a fixed price menu with maybe a choice of app, choice of entree and a dessert, and maybe get a glass of wine or a cup of coffee with your lunch, and keep it simple, not stress out the kitchen too much. I mean, it's going to be, I think a very low key kind of home style lunch. You know, it won't be a full menu. It won't be the dinner menu, but it'll be something that I think Ginevra and I will put together, while we're there anyway,
And the fun part of it is that we can change it. I mean, with a dinner menu, it's sort of nice to have consistency and have people come in for the same things over and over.
Don't ever take the bones off the menu, never.
And for lunch, we could go, we could do things that are maybe not totally Southern French or do some different flavors in there, get some other Mediterranean flavors. Mm-hmm. But because we change it daily and, people can call that day to find out what we're serving. It would be sort of a fun thing. And I think it's a fun way to eat, You just eat what's being served in a certain way.
You could turn over the tables a bit faster that way, too, because lunch people want to be in, get back to work.
No two-hour lunches here.
Sometimes, maybe.
Every now and then. Do you both cook? How do you divide up duties in the restaurant?
We both do pretty much everything. Ginevra's a better pastry chef than I am, so I think I try to help, but I mess things up probably more than I help things sometimes, so she kind of does that. And
I've taken that role over. But yeah, we both cook.
But we both pretty much do everything.
So. Eric preps all day long, and oftentimes on the busy nights, I'll get behind the hotline and he'll expedite, and I'll just be the third set of hands on the line to help out, make sure the food's going out right and fast, on time, rather. So, yeah, we're there.
And where does, what's your daughter's name?
Grace.
Grace. And so she comes in and plays around during the day?
Yeah, well, we have a lot of space outside, and we fenced it in so that she can't get too far. And we, she rips all the tomato plants out of the ground and,
has a grand time.
She has a grand old time, No, she's great.
And then she'll either go home in the evening. We have a babysitter once in a while, or she'll actually sleep at the restaurant because we have an office and nursery, basically.
Perfect. So, that's great.
Yeah, she's around.
When we first started, we were going to call it like the Fox Club, the office where it's like, you have like a
bottle of
gin back there or something. But now it's all like diapers and wipes and like the pack and play, There's no booze anywhere. You got to compromise, I guess.
Yeah, got to compromise. There'll be booze there soon enough, I'm sure.
Right.
She'll be bringing it.
One thing that I really like about your aesthetic is the letterpress. I noticed that letterpress business cards, letterpress menu, wine list. That's really very nice.
Yeah, well, you have to pay attention to the details. And, I think especially when Ginevra stopped working, when she gave birth, she spent a lot of time thinking about details, and we both did, back in New York, and we wrote a lot of stuff down, and you know, I think we're still going through our notes from the last few years, just trying to, you know, really do everything food wise and organizationally wise, business card wise, whatever it is, you know, that we always wanted to do.
But the fun thing about that is that that menu, the pattern from that comes from our wedding invitations. So we did letterpress for our wedding invitations and used the exact, I mean, kind of a nice thread, I guess, you know, just because it we wanted that feel of having that sort of party, you know, not every night, but but we used the same pattern and the same people, and they worked with us to get the menus and business cards.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, which very is nice. Fun. Nice connection.
Now, we've got only like 6 or 7 minutes left. So let's talk about the wine list. Both of your wine lists. I know that you both have cider, but you have a very focused, not huge wine list, which I think is good. You don't need like a Bible. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about the philosophies behind the wine list for both Bistro 29 and Eloise.
At Bistro 29, we're limited in both space and in, you know, there's not a huge amount of area for our wine storage and that. So we wanted to make it kind of like the food. You know, you want to make it so it's fresh. You're turning things over. You're not having something sitting there for a long time. Mm-hmm. And so we try to keep our wine list to a minimum. I mean, not a minimum, but, you know, we don't have 20 different Zins and 20 different Syrahs. We have a couple of each. And, you know, we rotate through different wine, you know, different wineries and this and that. So we're not stuck on, say, having Mary Edwards, you know, all year long that we'll use that, her, and then we'll go to
you
something
just
else.
Just what you have.
Yeah. And we're sticking primarily with Sonoma County and French just because if we start to broaden our horizons too much, I think I'd be stuck behind the bar tasting every day. And as fun as that sounds.
It's a lot of work.
Yeah.
It is a lot of
work. Then I'm not very good at useful at night, so.
Yeah. Exactly.
But how many selections do you have overall?
Overall, between red and white, about 50.
About 50.
Yeah.
That's pretty that's a pretty generous list.
Yeah, ours is a lot smaller than that. Yeah. I think we have 8 whites and 13 reds.
And 4 sparklings.
4 sparkling. Mm-hmm. And I think two-thirds is... two-thirds of the wines are like small producer Sonoma County wines. Mm-hmm. And then the rest are French bottles that Ginny and I just kind of personally love. Mm-hmm. So including a couple Southern French bottles that are just great, you know.
And I think also not only the space issue a little bit with us too, but it's you when you're opening, it's a big investment
to
buy a lot of wine. And the restaurants that have enough money to buy, you know, 200 or 300 cases of different wines, it's great and good for them. But, you know, when you're kind of just when you're starting off, it's nice to know that you're behind every single bottle of wine that's on the list.
And I think it's fun as a customer.
Yeah.
It's really fun. There was a little place that sort of the last one in the old regime in a way. It was ahead of its time. I think it was open for 10 months. It just crashed and burned. But it was delicious. Everything about it was wonderful, including their wine list. Mm-hmm. And I think I single-handedly went through all 2 cases. I think it was their Gloria Ferrer. It was the first Gloria Ferrer still wine. Mm-hmm. Oh, it was a 1991 Pinot Noir. Mm. Think about it now. $17 on the wine list.
Yep.
And nobody was buying it. And I was just, you know, going over there twice a week.
And,
and that's when I first had sardines in this country on a wine list.
That sounds like a great place.
It was. It was right on the corner. It's now Alice's restaurant.
Okay.
But it was Sapphire Minx.
Okay.
And it was just absolutely
great.
Perfect. Perfect. So I like those focused ones, partly because you get to know each one, but also there is turnover. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you go in 3 weeks later and it's like, oh, there's something new.
And there's something new. Exactly. Yeah. So if we, you know, you taste something, you may initially love it and then you come revisit it and maybe you still like it, but you want to move on to something else. You're not, you know, you don't have 5 cases to sell in the back and you don't have to push something to someone. So anyway.
What should you drink with roasted marrow bones?
Well, pretty much. Pretty much anything goes.
Oh, okay.
You know, but what would I drink? We have a the Porter Creek, which is a local winery, does a Carignan, which is just funky, barnyardy, great. You know, 100% Carignan wine. And then there's a French bottle by the name of La Bastide Blanche, which is from Bandol, which I think would go equally as well. But you know, Bone marrow's.
I mean, you could go white with it,
you could drink a glass
too.
Of water with it. It's, it would be awesome.
So. Sparkling water. Some nice dry sparkling, too, because that'll just go right through to you. It'll perk up your palate.
I mean, the kava would be... Oh, the kava. The kava, which is super affordable and
I love
totally
kava.
Delicious. I mean, I do, too. And brightens up, you know, that fat. It kind of... It washes it away a little bit and lets you keep going.
Yes. Yes, as one wants to do. And... Can we talk about the portion? Because it's really big.
It is really big.
It's deceptively large too. I mean, you know, the you're not eating, you know, the whole.
No, but there's just a lot of marrow. It just goes
and
all
it's
the
decadent.
Way through.
It's rich. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a lot bigger portion. Not so much bones themselves, though. Those are bigger. But if you compare it to Cafe Bastille in San Francisco. Cafe Bastille is really a little appetizer.
Right. Well,
grew up going to we've spent the last many years going to Blue Ribbon and both Prune in New York. And when you go and you order the bone marrow, both places, you get three bones,
it's an
four
event.
Bones.
You know, ordering the bone
and
marrow.
And you share it and everyone's dripping with grease by the end.
From where I sit, I mean, one bone, you know, we serve three kind of 2.5-inch high bones. And one's not nearly enough. Two
is good.
It's kind of good, but you know, you just have to. You got to push it sometimes. I think a little. So we just do three, just to make it good, and you know, three's a good number.
I pushed it. I cleaned my plate.
Yeah. Most people
That's
usually
what we
do.
Like to see.
So, it's coming up on time for Mouthful's book review. So, address for restaurant Eloise.
It's 2295.
2295.
Ravenstein Highway South.
And just there, if you're headed towards Sebastopol, it's certainly before you get to the flea market.
Right after the sensuality shop.
There you go. Yeah. And your phone number?
It's 823-6300.
That's 823-6300. And finally, when are you open?
We're open Monday through Saturday, opening at 5:30. Closing at 9:30, Monday through Thursday, and then Friday and Saturday we're open till 10.
Good for you. Yep. And opening soon for lunch, five days a week?
Probably, Tuesday through Saturday.
Okay. Well, it's Ginevra Iverson and Eric Korsch. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having us.
And
thank
I
you.
Really appreciate it, and I wish you lots of success. Brian, what's the address for Bistro 29?
We're at 620 Fifth Street in downtown Santa Rosa.
Just a block east of Mendocino.
Yes. Right across from Gary Chu's.
Yes. And the phone number?
It's 546-2929.
546-2929. And the website, bistro29.com?
Yes.
Website for Eloise?
Yeah, I think it's getting launched today.
Oh, congratulations.
Yeah. So it's just a starter site.
That's
but
okay.
But it's there. It has some links and a map. But it will
restaurant
be
developed. Eloise?
RestaurantEloise.com.
Okay. Well, Brian, thanks. Thank you.
Oh, no, just to let you know, we are Tuesday through Saturday.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Tuesday through Saturday. Closed Monday, except for special events.
Yeah, and we do special events, lunches, Sunday, Mondays. Uh-huh. And, of course, holiday parties are
right, but your standard service is dinner only.
Dinner only, opening at 5.
Yeah, no plans for adding lunch. Don't work too hard.
It doesn't. I got the restaurant to try to help my family out, not have a family.
Yes,
so,
good for you.
Yes,
good for you. I wish you lots of success. I really wish you success with that 29th. I think that's a really great idea.
Well, thank you.
And now, be sure to meet me back here. Actually, next week, I think we're all going to take the Sunday before Labor Day off. And so you'll be hearing an archive. I think we'll probably replay Alice Waters' recent appearance on Mouthful. I've had a lot of comments about that. I think people would like to hear it again. So we'll probably do that. Slow Food Nation, of course, will be going on next weekend. So meet me back here 2 weeks from tonight for another yummy episode of Mouthful, Wine Country's Most Delicious Hour here on KRCB.
You know that wonderful Audrey Hepburn film, Sabrina, about the chauffeur's daughter who gets shipped off to the Cordon Bleu cooking school in Paris to recover from her infatuation with a boy above her station? I am clearly not the only girl who saw that movie and decided that studying at the Cordon Bleu was the one-way ticket to the glamorous life. I went through a whole dozen eggs once, learning to crack an egg one-handed the way Audrey did when she stirred up a midnight omelet for Humphrey Bogart. Kathleen Flynn, author of The Sharper the Knife, the Less You Cry, landed at the Cordon Bleu at the age of 36 after being fired from her corporate job in London. It was a bit of a flyer. She didn't want to be a professional chef, and she didn't speak French. Nonetheless, she handed over her life savings to the world's most famous cooking school, egged on by a charming new boyfriend who clearly had never heard of risk management. He's almost killed in a parasailing accident at the end of the book. To get a diploma from the Cordon Bleu, a student must complete what's called the classic cycle, beginning, intermediate, and superior cuisine. Beginning is just what you'd expect, basic sauces, basic pastry, and some foundational recipes like fish and white wine sauce and onion tart. You also get a lot of practice cutting up animals. Skinned rabbits, the author notes, look unsettlingly like cats. All this butchery provides plenty of opportunity for pratfalls, like the time the author, wielding a vegetable peeler to pop out the eyes of a fish, accidentally flicks it onto the persticky Southern belle across the table from her. Or when a live lobster gets the best of a Japanese student named Suki, who chases it around the kitchen, keening, "Come back, lobster!" The recipes become more complicated and intermediate, and by the time Superior rolls around, Flynn and friends launch into the intricacies of fusion cuisine. I was gratified to find that mango foam and guacamole are now on the syllabus at the Cordon Bleu, which I falsely had assumed had resisted the internationalization of cuisine that has made eating so fun in recent years. Flynn has a terrific eye for detail, and you get a real sense of what the Cordon Bleu looks like and how it works, as well as what it feels like to cook soufflé and vol-au-vent with some of France's best chefs looking over your shoulder. She's a fine portraitist as well, and the descriptions of her teachers and fellow students are deft, incisive, yet sympathetic. Flynn does a fine job of weaving the story of her courtship with her adventurous follow-your-dreams boyfriend into the narrative of her Cordon Bleu experience, and she ties up every chapter with a mini-meditation on life and food that might have felt forced in less sure hands. I could barely tear myself away from this book. The Sharper the Knife, the Less You Cry, now out in paperback, is truly a cut above. This is Laura Hager for Mouthful.
Mouthful is produced and hosted by Michelle Anna Jordan. Lawrence Alberti is Mouthful's engineer. For more information about Mouthful, send an email to mouthful@michelleannajordan.com. That's Michelle with one L. You can also download Mouthful's free podcast from krcb.org or from iTunes.